Hey, Broadway fans, we're back for another week of Broadway Breakdown here on Popcorn Talk Network. Today, we are talking the phenomenon Rent, so stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Broadway Breakdown.
How we gonna pay last year's rent?
That was a nice melody.
Yeah. We got it.
The cast is here.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on this, well, in LA at least, this kind of dreary Sunday.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not so dreary where you are. I am your host, Brianna Phipps. You guys can find me at bphipps14 on Instagram and Twitter, bphipps1214 on Snapchat. And I have a lovely full panel here today. To my left, we have Mr. Drexel Hurd.
Hey guys, I'm Drexel Hurd. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Drexel Hurd.
And across the table, we have Mr. Timothy Rodriguez.
Hey everybody, I'm Timothy Michael. You can reach me on all social media platforms at I am Timothy Mike, I-A-M Timothy Mike.
And usually in the booth, but now out of it, we have the lovely Alexis Torres.
Hey guys, you can find me doing a dance in a 10-gallon plastic pickle tub at atorres890.
Very nice. So let's just get right into this musical because we're going to have so much to talk about.
Yes.
Let's start where the musical came from. Let's talk a little bit about their origin. This was a La Boheme kind of redone for the 90s, 80s, 90s.
Yep.
I don't know personally, I've never seen the opera La Boheme, but I do know that it has to do with tuberculosis, and Jonathan Larson obviously changed it to HIV and AIDS for this to make it make more sense for people. I mean, we don't really have a tuberculosis epidemic anymore.
Like, God, I hope not.
Yeah, right?
I mean, there's people that have it, but it's not like killing.
No, an epidemic, not like that.
Right.
Yeah.
I think what I found really interesting, because I was doing a lot of research on the opera, it was written by Giacomo Puccini, which I thought was really fascinating. It opened, premiered in February 1st, 1896, literally 100 years before the actually off-Broadway show premiered, which I thought was really, really fascinating. The characters also have a lot in common with the off-Broadway Rent show.
Names changed. We had Rodolfo, a poet who became Roger. We had Marcello, a painter who became Mark. Musetta, a singer, Maureen. Schoenard, a musician, Angel, which they reference in the show.
They do.
Which is her last name.
Yes.
Her last name, yep.
Colin, a philosopher, Tom Collins. An Alessandro, a state counselor, Joanne, and Benoit, a landlord, Benny.
Yeah.
So very similar.
I thought it was
Except
super fascinating.
Except for Joanne. Yeah. Well, I mean, she was a lawyer in the...
Yeah.
So it makes the most kind of, I guess, sense. The only one that I... there was one I was looking at, but I feel like now, looking back over it, it makes sense. But when Maureen was a singer, I was kind of like, well, she shouldn't be a singer. I felt like her and, like, Roger should be changed.
I mean, Maureen had, like, you know, Over the Moon.
It still makes sense.
And, yeah. She sang through Over the Moon.
She did.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was like spoken word poetry, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah, with a mixture. It makes sense. Yeah.
As soon as I saw Musetta sing,
Maureen
I was
the
Lin-Manuel
of her time.
Yes, of course. I don't know, I guess just in my head, because it's like performance art and stuff, poet made more sense in my head for her, and Roger's obviously a singer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But name-wise, it works best for this way.
And funny little tidbit, Schoenard, obviously played by Angel in the Rent production, in the opera plays the violin instead of the drums, and he kills a parrot in Today for You instead of a dog, which I thought was really fascinating.
Wow.
A parrot.
That's literally...
I mean, I can see that. I can totally see that.
That's probably my least favorite part of the play.
Oh, the
only because I love dogs so much that I'm like, they killed a puppy.
I also just feel like that's so fiction, because I'm like, I really can't see a dog barking itself to death. That's insane.
Right.
I mean, you never know.
Or like jumping off
the
window. Yeah.
Oh,
because,
did it?
Because so Angel plays so much. Really
he encouraged the dog
to
find its light.
Why do you want to break me?
Another fascinating thing that I found researching the opera was the La Vie Boheme song takes place in the Life Cafe in Alphabet City in New York. Really famous Life Cafe. It's shut down now. In the opera, it's taking place at Café Momus, which I thought was pretty fascinating. Café Momus.
Sounds so fancy.
Right? I was like, okay, Italian, get it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say anything in French or Italian or whatever,
I mean, that's
it's
not
fancy.
Yeah.
But I thought it was so interesting that Jonathan Larson took this show and like just really recreated it, like kept true, put so much of like the music and recreated it for the show, but like kept little things like the Musetta's waltz and everything. And it just, it really makes sense, I think, for that time period in the 90s and stuff of what people were going through and what he himself had friends going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that he lost.
So I love that you can take this piece of art from, you know, the early 1900s and recreate it for today and it still makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. And like I said, I was just really surprised by the similarities between the opera and Rent in itself.
Yeah, he really did a lot of research.
He did a really great job at adapting it too, because even the storylines, even their occupations has a lot to do with the characters and that he took inspiration from. I really enjoyed doing the research for it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just, it just goes to show that, like, I mean, no matter what time period you're in, you're obviously going to have people living in kind of this poverty level situation and these artistic situations, which, as we all know living here, they're not always the most paying until you reach a certain level.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, no matter what century you're in, you're going to have this happening, and there'll always be a new disease of a new century.
Yeah.
One of the things, and I know I brought up Lin-Manuel already, but it would have been very interesting to see Jonathan Larson and Lin-Manuel in the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Because you've got two, obviously Hamilton is the Rent of now.
Mm-hmm.
And not in its historical sense, you know.
And so, what it did for theater.
And what it did for theater, and how those two writers researched the backstory well enough. And, you know, La Boheme, obviously, with Rent, Hamilton was not only the story of Hamilton, but like the mixture of the West Wing.
Yeah.
So I mean, those two artists clearly did their research to incorporate things that fans of either La Boheme or the West Wing kind of had that knowledge about.
Yeah, and the fact that they're both very well-diverse casts as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So I think that was also something that you can just, you know, put a pin in as well. Yeah. So,
And in the early 90s, I mean, this was, what, 20 years ago?
Yeah, well, even when it came out,
even more so. Such a diverse
cast. More so
when
you're talking about when they were writing it, because the original idea came from Billy Arnson in 88, year I was born.
Yeah!
Then he teamed with Larson in 89, so they were working on this for almost 10 years before it came to light. Well, really, Larson was working on it because Billy and him eventually split ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, and then it was like, well, in the workshop in the late 80s, it was almost a little bit different of a story, not story, but like everything wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
And then it didn't hit peak until obviously the early 90s.
And I think what Jonathan Larson probably had the most difficult time with would be because La Boheme, the opera, didn't have any unified plot line. Mm-hmm. It was just a series of vignettes with all of these actors.
Yeah, people kept telling him that they're like, there's no story here. You have songs, but no story.
Yeah, which I love because he made a story out of it. And I really do think that what you had touched on earlier with, you know, transferring from tuberculosis to AIDS, I really think that really grounded the story with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think that made it easier for people to kind of
tune into that. Especially during that time period, especially in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, the amount of like, because it's semi-autobiographical as well. He did put a lot of himself and his friends into this show as well, and he had a lot of friends suffer and die from this disease, and that's where actually what is it, that one song Will I came from, because his friend went to a meeting and someone got up and said like, I'm not afraid of dying, but I'm afraid of like losing my dignity. I'm afraid of like this taking over, and that's all anyone's going to know me as. So I love that he took from there too, from himself, and because I think all great art you have to put yourself in, of course. And it's, you know, when you're not personally going through something, like if he didn't have AIDS, but he did have a terrible disease, and you know, you have friends that have this terrible disease, so you can pull from that and create this thing and make it really relatable
to
many people.
And I think the, you know, folks that know Rent will probably also know Tick, Tick, Boom at the same time that Jonathan Larson did, which was more about Jonathan Larson's life than Rent was, even though there are pieces of Jonathan Larson in Rent. If you listen to or you see a production of Tick, Tick, Boom, that is like 100% Jonathan Larson's life.
Which is also a very good musical.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, his sister said one of the biggest pieces of him that she sees in the musical is just the set, because she's like, that was literally his flat in New York. That's what it looked like. So, but let's talk a little bit about kind of Jonathan Larson and this, and how his kind of terrible ending to his life.
Tragic.
Yeah, it breaks my heart every time.
The night before previews, you know, done all this work on this workshop, had so many failed plays that never got off the ground, and to have the one that finally makes it, and the night before your previews, to have you die in that way, in the way where you're going to the doctor and you're trying to get help and they're just not knowing what's wrong and misdiagnosing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think not only would that have been tough for obviously the Larson family, but obviously this cast that
Especially Anthony, that relied
on the writer to, you know, because previews, or if people don't know, obviously, I think people who obviously watch Broadway Breakdown will probably know because they're Broadway fans and stuff like that. But once you're in previews, the story still has to change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a huge period between preview and opening night on Broadway.
I mean, huge period slash short period, because sometimes it's within a month.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but you're doing a lot of work.
Yes.
So I would have been really interested to know if there would have been any changes Jonathan Larson would have made between preview and actual opening night.
Well, Adam Pascal said that the one thing that sits with him is he didn't like Your Eyes.
Mm.
Yeah.
He didn't like that
or Jonathan Larson?
Him.
Right.
Yeah.
Pascal. He said that he felt, you know, this character's working on this song, this entire musical, this song that really tells his story, and he didn't feel like that was a good enough song for what it ended up with, and he thought that Jonathan Larson probably would have changed it had he lived through previews, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally like Your Eyes. I think it's a sweet song. Yeah.
It's a sweet song, but I get where he's coming from.
Yeah, and also Adam Pascal had to go through a lot of changes for him for this one, like the fact that he is an actual musician and he had to learn to sing with his eyes open.
Yeah,
that's like my favorite fact. And so the fact that he had to work on that, he also had to learn to not, you know, to sing not like up here. He had to learn to like sing to the audience and like it was trying to pretty much get him to connect to this play. And I think even though it's unfortunate when Jonathan Larson passed, I think that sparked him to be like, okay, I know what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And now he, in the movie and in this, the performance is always good.
Yeah.
So.
And just to add more drama onto the entire, like him dying before previews is, you know, he died from Marfan syndrome or an aortic dissection, which is caused by Marfan.
One of the causes of the kidney
Syndrome. And that's an inherited disorder that affects connective tissue, which is a really rare case. Only 200,000 people are diagnosed with that throughout the year. And it's just like, why him? You know what I mean? I just keep going back to that.
It's also just such a scary thought because, like I said, he did go to the doctor and, like, I wrote it down. They had, they failed to diagnose him twice. One time they said it was food poisoning.
Oh, jeez.
And, the second that killed him, he found food poisoning at St. Vincent's Hospital. The medical doctor said that he had a virus and both sent him home.
That is
and
so
that's just
scary.
So scary to think that, like, you could do everything right. You could, like, be like, I don't feel well, go to the doctor, and they just can't find something.
Yeah.
It just, and it also baffles my mind because I'm like, especially because we talk about, you know, the AIDS epidemic and it's really prevalent in the 90s. The doctor is sitting there going, oh, you just have a virus. Go home. Like,
Or food poisoning.
Like, I would think that they would do more screening, especially with this epidemic going on. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I went to the doctor a few months ago and I had a little pain and the doctor was like, did an ultrasound and he was like, you're fine. I was like, clearly I'm not fine if I keep coming back to you. So doctors, I think, do misdiagnose things or they don't try hard enough to do their job sometimes.
Yeah, because I'm with Drexel on this one because there was one time where my mom took me to the doctor because she was like, oh, she's having stomach pain and I don't know what's going on. And she's like, oh, no, I think she's just, you know, experiencing cramps and should go home. And as soon as I walked out, I threw up. And he's like, okay, bring her back.
Right.
Right. Really,
like,
guys?
You could have just tried just a little harder on that.
You could have figured out a different test.
I think it would have been different. I think that had... Because... Obviously, there was the workshop. Workshops are a little bit different now than they probably were back then.
Yeah.
And so had Jonathan Larson been in workshop form and rent in the
2000s,
and he would have been a name, somebody probably would have checked him out a little bit harder in New York City. It would have been a little different situation for him.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
Let's get a little bit into the music, because that was Jonathan Larson's original role with the show before he kind of took over completely. This musical kind of changed how we do musicals.
Yeah.
Like, we see a lot of rock musicals now, but they weren't as prevalent in the 90s. And actually, a lot of the cast members returned, like, they joined eventually, but, like, they were turned off. Like, I know Jesse Martin was turned off because he's like, I don't want to do musicals. And they're like, no, this isn't Sing Out Louise. This isn't that kind of thing. Like, you need to be part of this. And he came in and sang Amazing Grace and got hired on the spot for it.
I mean, come on. Have you seen that man? Like, yes.
So, I mean, it was even a turnoff. You know, this was a very minimal, you know, show. This was very unknown. The actors were unknown. Everybody was unknown. And the writing
except
was
T. Diggs, right?
Except for T. Diggs.
Yeah, he was pretty huge in the 90s.
He was just at Stella, right?
Yeah.
Hustle got a group back.
And he, well, yeah, and he was trying to do more film and television and not musicals.
Yeah.
So they, like, everyone, I felt like it was either, it was funny, most people with the show had to do it because they just needed to pay their rent, which was or it was their, like, agents and the casting director for the show being like, no, you need to be a part of this. Like, please listen
to me. Can you imagine if we had a different cast than the one that we had in the original Broadway cast? Like, I think it would be interesting because all these people now have pretty huge careers.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I mean, they're all consistently working since the show. And before the show, they were, besides those two, were trying really hard to get by.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a few musicals that have that impact on a lot of people, and, and I think we've already named the two just that, you know, that have done that and were is literally launched careers after that.
Yeah.
Except for Ragtime, because I think Ragtime launched Audrey McDonald's career.
No, I agree. You know, I agree with that. But I think for a lot of people who know Indina at this point in time, they're all like, oh, I didn't know she was in Red. I'm like, well, yeah, because her pitch is different in this one than she is in Wicked, and she's belting 95%
even
of
if you watch her, even watching her in the movie as opposed to listening to her in the Broadway cast, like, her voice is grown a lot.
Yeah.
And don't let Idina fool you, she would not have gotten Wicked had Rent not come around.
No, that's completely agree.
So we don't want Idina to forget her little roots where she came from.
But this musical is just, I think it really pays homage. Like, I love the fact that none of these people, besides maybe Idina and Tay and Jesse, were singers. Like, you know, they had interesting voices. They weren't those classically trained, beautiful. Like, you know, Mark has the very, Anthony's very, you know, nasally and kind of quirky with his singing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Daphne is not necessarily.
Oh, yeah, like, she's got that raspy.
Yeah.
Like,
which I know that's a hit and miss for some people. Yeah.
But well, I'm not a big Idina fan.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fine. I think Tay Diggs, I'm not a big fan of Tay Diggs either. So it's all around.
Love me some Tay Diggs.
I mean, right? But, like, I don't know. Like, it's not the fact that it's bad. It's just, it doesn't hit my ear in the right way. Right. So,
I mean, but I think that if you had had everybody be an amazing singer in the show, it wouldn't have come across in the right way.
No,
you have to have it be somewhat underdog because those are what these people are.
Yeah, it's supposed to feel real to you, like you're talking with your friends and seeing their story. So,
I also think during the casting process, I don't think they were exactly looking for singers. I think they wanted actors to make this story that's so powerful.
I think they
wanted
both, but they also just were like, we need to kind of take over.
Find some people, right?
Yeah,
and I think the only real singer in that entire show is the Seasons of Love soloist.
Oh my gosh.
The only person that really has to be a singer
is the singer. Well, because they have to hit those.
Well,
there's
both of the soloists in that.
Yes, the guy and the girl,
Freddie Walker.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
So, I mean, I was happy with the fact that they went with the way what they did because I, again, like you said, if we hadn't had these people, this would have been a very different show.
Yeah. I was just curious what you guys thought if we had, like, I don't know, like, Bette Midler, like, singing, like, Rent. I'd be like, whoa.
She probably really wanted to.
Sorry, yeah, Peter.
She was already too big at that point.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, if we're like, let's get all these A-list, like, Broadway
like,
stars.
I think anytime Rent is done, and, I mean, obviously, I saw the show when Anthony and Adam did it back in 2009, I want to say. But I think that anytime you do the show, I think a majority of the people should be unknowns.
The tour right now is completely unknown.
Oh,
the 20th anniversary
tour
is completely unknown. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not even, like, a headliner. It's like, nobody knows who any of these people
Which
are.
Which I like that.
And right. You also, at this point, with Rent, you don't really need a headliner. Because usually you get a headliner to bring in people. But Rent is so well known and so touching to a lot of people that people, no matter who you put in that show now, people will flock to go see it.
Right. Yeah. And to the point where, you know, even, I think, Tracy Toms talks about it, where she auditioned for it like 9 times.
Oh, wow.
And then got the movie, and then
got the show.
Movie.
And then
so,
it was filmed,
she,
too.
And she was a Rent head, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was huge. All she wanted was Joanne. Yeah. And she didn't get it until she got the movie. So. Yeah.
And funny thing, if we're going to talk a little bit about the movie, Rosario Dawson was also the only other new cast member to the movie, and she wasn't a singer at all. Yep. She was so nervous about going into that room and singing for these casting directors and everybody like that, and Christopher Columbus, who directed the film. And she was just so self-conscious about her voice, which actually I think it's turned out amazing. I think so, too. With the vulnerability that she shows in her voice in the movie, I think it's great.
Well, I mean, it's a step up from Daphne Room in Vegas, so, I mean.
I mean, like I said, it's a hit and miss.
I'm with you on that one.
Right.
I'm like, I was not the biggest. Like, while I think Daphne did a great job acting and stuff, like, yeah, I agree. Her voice, for me personally, is just.
Yeah, it doesn't
hit a little bit.
I don't want anybody to. I love Daphne Room in Vegas.
Yeah.
She just has a different voice than
exactly.
Than,
yeah,
and I'm glad that Brianna brought that up because yes, her voice is acquired taste, but her acting, well, if you watch her perform,
and
that's
it's why like she got that role. Yeah, because they didn't want her based off of her singing, because they did want someone more operatic.
No, correct. Which
I don't know. I can't imagine like a stripper just singing opera.
Hey man, I'm sorry. But, I would make it rain if not if a stripper was singing opera to me. Just
but, but we went from but people that we do know like we that role went from Daphne Ruby Vega to Rosario Dawson to Renee Ellis Goldsberry,
oh,
who ended
she's
up
my favorite.
Being the
being
final
the,
Mimi.
Yeah,
I mean there. I mean that's
in
a
case
singer,
you don't know who she is. She's now in Hamilton.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well,
well she was
not
in
anymore.
Hamilton.
She was in Hamilton.
But I mean, like that's another thing that she has under her belt as well. I mean, she's done a lot, but like namesake wise, those are the two plays that she's like really well known.
Right.
So.
And she was a great Mimi.
Yeah, that's
fine. She's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and let's talk about the cast a little bit because, like, not even just the actors, just the characters themselves. Mm-hmm. So we have Mark and we have Roger, who are roommates living in this flat in New York City.
In Alphabet City.
In Alphabet City.
Which is the Lower East Side if people aren't from New York.
Neither of them have jobs. I mean, the opening is just like so. I can't even like think of the words. It's just like you have this guy sitting here singing and having like that directorial cutaway to the answering machine, and then like our first experience with the show is just this high-pitched woman singing.
Oh, I know, yeah. But it's so good
to her son.
Do you guys ever every I don't know, maybe it's just because my friends are crazy and we're the crazy rent people, but like on Christmas Eve at 9 p.m., like, you see statuses, Facebook statuses, start with December 24th, 9 p.m.
Yes! 24th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And then you're like, oh, yeah,
okay,
man,
we're gonna do this, aren't we? Yeah. No, same thing. I mean, my answering machine for, like, or at least my voicemail message. Yeah, it was speak. And my mom's like, I don't understand what that means. I'm like, don't worry about it, Mom. It's fine.
You're just supposed to speak, okay?
Yeah, just speak into the microphone.
And then we have Mimi. Upstairs neighbor / stripper
at the
Cat Scratch Club. And then we have Joanna Maureen. Maureen is ex to Mark, now dating Joanne. Left him for a woman.
No, bisexuality going on.
Yeah.
The love triangle.
I can't remember if in the playbill, I think it was like this, there was a family tree in the playbill.
In the playbill.
Oh, yeah. Are you serious? That's awesome.
And I know we're going to talk about it, but we just saw Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812, and there's a family tree in there.
Is that like
the
a playbill. Thing now?
I mean, just based on the way that Brianna's breaking it down, like, you have to know, like, where everybody is. And right, I think there was a family tree.
Oh, cool.
I just can imagine someone coming in halfway through this show and, like, being like, what is
what
happening?
What are we talking about? Family tree?
Yeah.
And then we have Collins and Angel, the most beautiful couple for me in the show.
Heck yeah. That's my favorite couple.
I love
couple.
Them so much. And we have our own... Yeah. Angel and Collins right here.
Where?
Guys. And we actually have a couple photos that they of them when they did the show.
Look at these glorious things. Yes. I love it so much.
Yes.
Oh
yeah. The first one was during You Okay Honey. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was obviously for
those green stockings.
Yeah.
They are beautiful.
Today
had
you
worn heels before then?
No. I literally had to wear heels to every single rehearsal. And literally had to learn to dance, to walk. A lot of the female cast members were teaching me how to walk and dance and just use mannerism in heels because I was a dude in heels. Like, it was, yeah. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was a great show to work on, and then that's where we met. And he was playing Collins, I was playing Angel.
And for those of you that don't know, because we didn't know, these two are fiances right now.
Yes.
Seem to be married.
He put a ring on it.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah, I was listening to I hadn't listened to the cast album in a long time. And I don't know why. Maybe it's just I just didn't. And I was like, man, I forgot about this song. I almost forgot about You Okay, Honey. I forgot about like these. I kind of forgot about Santa Fe, but not really. But there are a lot of like Collins has the songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was it was a really.
The reprise of
Cover You.
Yeah.
Is just the most like.
I forgot about Contact.
Oh,
until
right?
today.
Right.
And I was like,
right?
What is this? What is this song?
Well, it's so funny because my boyfriend doesn't know the show and he's just listening to the soundtrack as I'm listening to it. And he's like, well, they're just saying so many random words in all these songs. And I'm like, if you don't like understand the show and you don't know like
what's
they're
happening?
Talking about at that moment, it does sound, you know, they're just saying random.
Especially in Love You, Boanne.
Yeah. You're like, I don't know.
And Contact, you know, they're just like wet shit.
Yeah. And it's so funny because I was thinking about this on the way, I was driving down to Laguna today and I was listening to the soundtrack. And I remember when I first was introduced to this show by my friend Ebony in like freshman year. Mm-hmm. And like, it was freshman year. I hadn't ever like come out, like it was not a thing for me, but I also understood the message. And so like Collins and Angel were like my first introduction into this new world of like gays and everything that's happening in this world. And I was like, what is happening? And so like Contact came out and then I'll Cover You. And I was like singing these songs and it was just, that was the, and then I saw it 2 years later. I was living in Japan at the time. I flew back to DC to do something. And then I saw the tour cast. And then that was my first four-way into Rent. And but that was how I was really introduced into coming into different feelings and trying, coping with myself and feeling okay with that kind
of stuff. No, that's awesome, because mine was kind of the same way. There was a girl that I was dating. She was also my best friend. We were best friends for kids, or since we were kids. And then when she was half Japanese and half British, and so she traveled a lot, so I never really got to see her. So she would send me stuff to be like, listen to this. This is what I'm listening to. Or read this. This is what I'm reading. I'm like, all right. And Rent came up, and she's like, you're going to love this. And also will explain what you're feeling with me right now. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, because I'm naive. And I'm like, right. And so she introduced me to this play, and we talked about it all the time. We sang the songs to each other, and she passed away, like, years ago. Mm-hmm. So for her funeral, I sang I'll Cover You Reprise, mm-hmm. and it was rough for me. Yeah. But it also now, every time I hear the album or see some sort of adaptation for it, it will be a different memory for me now. Instead of just being a play where I felt, you know, accepted, I also have someone that also kind of reminds me of Angel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's funny, I have a little bit of a confession to make. I actually didn't see the show first. I saw the movie first, and there was a lot of backlash about the movie, obviously. I enjoyed the movie. And then I went to obviously go see the show, and then I was in the production twice, which, I don't know, I feel like I had a little bit of a different perspective on it, because mm-hmm. I wasn't familiar with the actual show before, you know, being in it. And I just thought that, you know, it was fascinating, because I thought that the movie was good, mm-hmm. but a lot of people, Rent heads, didn't like it.
Yeah. I think, and I know we're not talking about the movie today, but
you can say a little bit about that. We're gonna get into it next week more, but
if this had been directed by somebody different, Chris Columbus is such a family oriented director.
Yeah.
He directed the first Harry Potter movie, which it ended up, like, people look at Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, they're like, ah, but then you look at, and then you get to movie three and you're like, see, that's what Harry Potter should have been. Mm-hmm. I think if Rent had been directed by a grittier director, Rent heads would have been like, ah, got
there
it. That's it right there. And, but, you know, they're trying to make a story so deep to be as family oriented, and they went with a director like Chris Columbus. So,
but also when the movie came out in 2005, and this goes for the show as well, like it's a very gritty show, and to put that on television, to put that in a movie, I just think that, you know, a lot of people wouldn't have been as receptive to it if it was as gritty as in maybe another director. So I can understand why Christopher Columbus went that way. Now with theater, on the other hand, you know, theater is made to make you feel uncomfortable, so that's so you could do whatever you want on a stage.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, the movie definitely would have been a little bit more
was it rated R, I guess?
It probably, I mean, we would have,
I think
we would
it's
have seen.
We would, it's PG-13. Yeah, well, I was meant that if it was a different director, yeah, it would have been rated R. Yeah. Like,
what we saw in the Normal Heart on HBO, and just kind of that time, Dallas Buyers
Club,
and
Angels in America,
is what Rent would have been had it been directed by somebody else.
That's true.
Yeah. A lot of needles, a lot of other stuff, and just we would have been like, oh my god, what is this?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of that greenness, because this show does have a lot of themes. I just jotted down a few that I personally connect with. We have this overall theme of hope.
Yes.
Giving hope, which the show was critically acclaimed for kind of putting that positive spin on having this disease, that because you have this disease doesn't mean you have to just go into a corner and wait to die.
Yeah.
You can still have a life. Right. You can still have love.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I actually loved about La Vie Boheme and their line, you know, living with and not dying from disease, because that speaks on so many levels. It's not just AIDS. It's, you know, cancer, brain tumors, you know, depression, any kind of, you know, thing that you're struggling with. You know, you live with it, and you don't let it overcome you. Yeah. And I think that, you know,
can choose to just give up, or you can choose to still, you know, take what you have and make the most.
Yeah.
Which is that line, there's only us, there's only this.
Exactly, and the fact that it really shows, you know, with the same thing with hope is also the whole fact of friendship and, you know, being hopeful that your friends will always be around to help you, like how Mark was always helping, you know, Roger try to get out of the house.
And helping his ex more.
Even
in Angel's death, there still was a layer of hope after that, because it all happened so fast.
Well, and even, I mean, Angel's death allowed for everyone else to, through their anger, see what was really important in their
exactly.
life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? So we also obviously have this huge theme of love.
Oh, yeah, everywhere.
Different kinds of love.
Except for Mark.
For Mark.
He still has love. I mean, he does.
He doesn't wind up with that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's funny because when you see that shot, especially in the movie, they pan towards the table of, like, everybody, so obviously
And he's just alone.
Yeah, and he's just, like, dancing. Right. And I was like, see, he's very happy with his life. I just think it's interesting that love
We can make up a future story for him.
Right? Yeah, and Lexi Darling.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
From Buzzline.
Yeah. From Buzzline. It's adorable.
He makes her realize the error of her ways.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I have Donna Summer, who was a press agent. She wrote that there wasn't really musicals written about people who were gay and in interracial relationships mm-hmm. at this time, but Michael Greff's direction, it didn't underline that there were black women and white women singing a song about love, or a Latin man and a black man that were singing about love. So this musical really did a lot for interracial communities, for the gay community. And for, you know, we have drag queens, we have right. so much going on in this show. It really underlines, like, that it's okay to be who you are no matter who you are.
Yeah. And I think one of the good things about Rent, since you brought that up, is that every cast has been so different. There has been mm-hmm. Asian American angels. There's yep. been, I think Tom Collins has always been black, but like.
I think Mimi kind of always has Mimi Latin because Mimi she has that line.
Marquette. Oh, yeah. Spanish babies cry.
Well, she's been black too.
Well, I guess
black. She's been black.
Yeah, I guess you, I mean, also
you can
Vanessa
still grow up in a Spanish neighborhood, I guess.
And Vanessa Hudgens played Mimi and she's Filipino.
Right.
So.
Right. So, and then,
but she
and,
looks.
Well, yeah. Because
Mark and Roger have not. Mark and Roger have not changed.
No, not really.
But you could change them. And that's the great beauty about these characters. There's most of them don't have to be a certain race or...
Right. Correct.
Yeah. You know? So it's you can go about like casting really for the talent.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I've seen a white Benny in Chicago. So
yeah.
I mean, that was different. But I was like, it doesn't differ.
I think the main
it.
Thing yeah. that with this is you just have to have diversity in the cast, because you can't make a show about somewhere like the East Village and not have you can't have only one race there. That's not how it works.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think Rent would work if it was just like all white people or like all black people.
I'm sure there are high schools out there that
we always say
all white Dream Girls.
I always say on the show I give a leeway to high schools and community theater because you have to.
It's hard to find.
You can only cast with whoever is one auditioning and whoever is in the community because they're not being.
Yeah,
because
like we did a community college of Rent and I wanted to be Mimi. That's like my dream like role. I've always wanted to be Mimi. but they put me as Joanne because there was a girl who was a better. She's more flexible than I was. She can sing and she can do all these crazy things. But she was white and I was just like, but no, okay, that's fine. I get to go make out with a lady. It's fine.
Yeah, I think there's only a couple of characters that have very specific lines that you're like, oh, that's that person's race.
Yeah.
And Mimi is one of those people. Mark is one of those people because he is Jewish.
Jewish.
But there are black Jews.
There are
different race Jews. So that is a character that could be interchangeable.
Correct.
Joanne is not a character like that. Joanne could be any race.
She can be
race.
Anybody. Yeah. I mean, she typically, I think, only gets cast as black because they just need someone to be that belter.
Right.
That tech.
But I know some white belters.
Right?
No, there are. Just,
but most of the time,
I think our Joanne was white. Was Emma?
Oh, Emma, no, she was Maureen.
She's Maureen.
Yeah.
I thought she was Maureen. I can't remember.
I mean, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, but all these characters, I think, could be whatever and interchangeable. As long as you have that diversity there, as long as you don't have one straight race, mm-hmm. I think that you can do whatever you want with this musical.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing in itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we also have this theme of poverty, which I think most of...
I was like, everybody's struggling in New York.
You live in New York, you're probably living below the poverty level that you should be.
And I'm from San Francisco, and definitely now if you live in San Francisco,
oh
you're most likely living below the poverty level.
It's so expensive out there.
We were just back in New York, and we were talking to our friends in Brooklyn who live in Brooklyn. We used to live in Brooklyn, and it's so different. Like, the cost of living right now, we used to live there 4 or 5 years ago, it's completely different. I don't know how people live in New York.
I don't know.
So expensive.
I don't know how people live in my hometown anymore. It's
even
just
LA
ridiculous.
Sometimes.
So
like,
LA, some, depends on where you live.
It depends on where
especially,
you live.
Especially,
I mean,
especially if you're a creative type of person, because those tend to be the jobs that don't really pay off for a long time, if at all sometimes.
Especially the occupations of our cast, too, like a teacher and a filmmaker and a singer.
Which
like
even now, even in 1993, it's still
the
still
same.
Relevant
yeah,
today.
Still the same.
I mean... unless you're like one of those few people that make it to that point,
yeah.
It's a very struggling lifestyle, yeah. And that certainly comes across, especially in La Vie Boheme, when he's when they don't even want them there because they know that they're not going to be able to pay.
Yeah. And I also think that just poverty speaks on more of a level than just not having money. It's that it makes people a little bit more acceptable of things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, not to say that, you know, rich people aren't accepting, but they do have more of this is our social
humbling.
Norm. Whereas,
it's just who, kind of where you grew up and you saw those things firsthand versus you just hear about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a sympathy with it, but you don't fully understand it unless you've been there or seen it. Totally,
yeah. I know we're talking about poverty when it comes to occupation, but I think there's also a poverty when it comes to healthcare.
Of course.
Because about 40% of the cast is living with some disease. Mm-hmm. And at the time, obviously, they couldn't pay for a lot of the stuff. So not only are they trying to pay for their medical care, but they're also trying to pay their rent, which obviously their medical care is more important to them.
Well, and I love that you brought up that, because I love that the show didn't stick with a social norm of who has this disease.
Right.
Yeah. We have Roger, who's a straight white male, who has this disease. Yeah, and we have Mimi, mm-hmm. who's also straight. Because, you know, there was such a large portion of time where people believed only gay people could get this.
Yeah, which I was like, mm-hmm. come on, guys.
You know, but that's what they looked at as the gay cancer. Like,
yeah, you should be called
grid. And it was not introduced it was introduced with Angel first.
Yes.
No, no, no.
No,
Angel, no, no, it was introduced with Roger first. Yeah, Roger first.
Oh, okay, because she says she wrote left a note in the bathroom saying we
had AIDS. So it was not introduced by the gay characters first, which is great. Mm-hmm. To people who might have thought that.
What I also thought was interesting with the character list in Rent is that, did Benny ever have AIDS?
No.
Not that they've ever talked about.
Yeah.
Right. I just thought that was interesting because, you know, Mimi does.
And if they dated.
A couple,
well, but that they use protection.
I know, but back then, I don't think that
I don't know, 90s, was, man.
But yeah. I also don't think that Benny was never in the poverty, in the situation that everybody else was in.
Well, not that we're seeing. I mean, he did used to live with them, so you have to think at one point he may have been.
I know, but we also don't know, what was it? Did they say 2 years? Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Or they lived together for 2 years? Because I don't know what the time frame was.
I'm running this song
in my head.
Yeah,
I can't
remember.
But,
you know, we do know that he used to live with them and that he married up and is now changed all of his, like, kind of who he was to be. Yeah. For her father, what he thought he needed to be.
Yeah.
We also don't know when Mimi contracted the disease.
Yeah.
So
I was
going to
say maybe it was after Benny. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, he is married, so, you know, there might have been that he used contraception because of the fact that he was married.
Mm.
Yeah.
And didn't want any babies coming out.
Yeah.
This show just, I love that we have that kind of, like, one person there that, you know, I would love to know what, like, Tay-Diggs thought of, like, having to play, like, kind of, like, the one person that no one
really likes.
Really
the
likes.
Antagonist.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's Benny's one of my favorite characters, and when I was cast as Collins, I really wanted to play Benny.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then Collins ended up becoming, you know,
worked out for you.
It worked out.
Yeah.
It worked out
real well.
Thank you. Thank you.
I meant like this is long
just
before.
God, sorry, I ruined your life.
This is long before. You know, I met the cast. This is long before. This is just during the casting process. Like, oh, I just want to play Benny.
Yeah, because as soon as I walked in the room, he was like, you know what? I'll be calling.
Yeah.
I actually saw all of the angels that they were considering because I was cast long before that. I didn't get to choose. I just remember seeing everybody's headshots and just being like, oh, okay, I see what's happening. I actually did not meet Tim until we were on our way to rehearsal. So,
nice.
But Benny's such a great character because he does go through so many different. He's got a good character arc in the sense that he was their friend. He's trying to do the right thing business-wise and for his friends. He gives them an alternative. He gives them, like, a chance. Like, you do this for me, I'll let you stay here for free.
Mm-hmm.
For free, forever. He didn't even put a time limit on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you stay here for free. You stop this protest, that's it. Then he goes and he's the one that pays for Angel's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Then he goes like
he's not a completely bad guy.
But technically he was the most hated. But that's why it kind of sucked in the movie for me, was because the fact they didn't really portray that, which we'll get more into it for next week. But like, I liked that they decided to keep Benny as kind of a good person towards the end of the play.
I like that even though you see these good parts of him throughout the play, that he's never becomes part of the group again by the end, because that would have been a very cliche Hollywood broad thing to like have him come back through, and all of a sudden, like, you know what, I paid for Angel, I paid for Mimi, like, mm-hmm. we're all friends again, everything's right. happy yeah. and okay.
But he was just kind of there, and
well,
supported.
He did what he's supposed to be there to do, and yeah. he showed a part, like, you know, that's a very human thing. Humans don't necessarily all of a sudden, you know, completely change who they are all over again.
Yeah, it's slowly, you know, baby steps.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So I really appreciated that they didn't have that kind of cookie cutter ending for yeah, everybody.
I agree.
This show also did a ton for pop culture. I mean, we see it today. I mean, I printed out, I'm not going to read everything, but like The Simpsons, Family Guy, Friends, Will and Grace, Scrubs, Big Bang Theory, it goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Recently in Deadpool.
Yeah.
He's wearing a Rent shirt.
I know.
Yeah. Like in the Angry Inch movie, he's wearing a Rent shirt. Like, it's even just slightly, it's kind of thrown into there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But even going back a little bit more, like, Hamilton has, you know, we went and saw the guy who played Aaron Burr in concert, and he said that Rent was such an influential
Leslie
music
Odom
for
Jr.
him. Yeah, Leslie Odom Jr., Leslie thank Jr. you. And he said that Rent was such an influential musical for him, and he actually sang that one of the songs from the show at his concert. But it also influenced Spring Awakening and all
oh,
these
yeah.
other,
there's
like,
so many musicals that wouldn't exist today if Rent had never been
yes.
there.
No, correct.
And but, you know, it's also one of the... It's also because it was revived about too early, I thought.
Well, it was never revived on Broadway, though.
It was off Broadway. Broadway.
Yeah, it was off Broadway, then yeah. They brought it back. I just they just brought it back, and you're like, that was a little early. But I mean, it was still good. I can't imagine if they brought it back now.
I mean, no, you're right. Yeah,
I mean,
if they like waited and then were like, hey, we're going to bring it back in 2017.
I mean, it didn't even go off Broadway until 2009,
yeah,
something like that. I mean, it stayed on Broadway for the 11th longest running musical on mm-hmm. Broadway. Now it got bumped, I think, by,
and we're now what, in the 20? Is it 25th or something?
20th.
Yeah,
1920s
anniversary.
Jeez. So it'll be the 21st this year.
The 20th anniversary. It came through the Pantages.
I
didn't get a chance to see it, but.
Well, I mean, it was only
it was,
for what?
It was,
for 8 days.
It was 8 days, and it was like
I mean, it's touring right now, but yeah, I don't think it's staying in any one location very long at all.
Right.
Yeah. No.
So I was that person on YouTube who was like, oh, somebody put the movie up. we
talked a little bit. We brought up the term Rent Heads. Rent was kind of the first musical that I'm aware of that had people touring with it, that had people waiting outside
mm-hmm.
for hours to get tickets. It was why they invented the lottery, which many
yep.
shows do now.
Yeah.
Yes.
And still yeah. do. And Rent still does that to this day, too, because I know that when it was in San Francisco, there was a lottery of, like, if you show up at this time.
Pantages did it.
Yeah.
They put aside 35 tickets for the orchestra and gave them away for $20 if mm-hmm. your name
that
is
how I
because
saw it
because Jonathan Larson was 35 years
I
old.
Did
nice.
Win
when
the, I did win the lottery.
Nice. And he also, it's also because people were waiting to get tickets at the box office because you didn't have internet like we do now. I mean,
nope.
you did, but it was a very slow process. So you had to go to the ticket. The box office to get your ticket, and people were getting like robbed to be able to, for people to buy tickets. So
yeah.
that's kind of also why they invented the lottery,
yeah.
so that we'd stop this happening.
And when we were in New York, both shows that we saw, we did the Rush tickets, and I remember standing in line because Dear Evan Hansen was at the theater right next door to Great Comet at the Imperial, and there's a digital lottery for that. And I remember saying how much I do not like the fact that there are digital lotteries, because people who would wait outside, like we stayed outside, we were there at 8
yeah.
o'clock and the box office didn't
you
open
should
until
have
10.
To work for those
you
tickets.
Should have to work for
yeah.
those Rush tickets, just like everybody who stood in line for Rent had to rush wait for those Rush tickets. Hamilton the same way, like you should have to work for
I think
those
it makes
if
it,
you
and it
really
makes it too easy
tickets.
Like to
just
it's like
to turn
you
over.
Know it's so much more accessible
yeah.
and if you have a job where you can't like maybe get to your phone that quickly, then you're just lost out. Whereas, like, if you can take
take
a weekend day and just
yeah.
go sit outside for a few hours, like,
yeah.
means a lot.
Yeah, but
more.
If you really, like I said, if you really want to see something,
you'll do it.
You are
yeah.
going to figure out a way to get there and do it.
Okay, we're going to get into Tony Awards now because we're running a little low on time. But right before we do, I really want to quickly go through and say our diva song for this show. And Tim, that is just the song that you love so much, and I have two, so you can have more than one. You just want
to
sing it no matter what, and you sing it out in your car, in your shower, whatever.
Mine
it
is. I guess I would have two. My belting one is Out Tonight.
Of course,
obviously.
Gotta do it.
And then the second one would probably be Will I?
Mm-hmm.
I just love
yeah.
that song.
I'm gonna see if I can change it up. I like Another Day just because of the fact of just the argument itself is really, really nice. But I also really loved Halloween. I thought Halloween was actually
a
really
good
one. Yeah.
I'm definitely going to go with Another Day and Will I? Because I mean, they're just fantastic songs. Mm-hmm. Actually, Will, I think, is the most beautiful, one of the most beautifully written rounds. Maybe it's because it's just a round, but like...
But the fact that you don't even really need music, you can just have the cast just sing it, it the entire time.
Mine's definitely Will I as well. And Goodbye Love, but not like the sweet part. Like, I do like the sweet part of Goodbye Love, but like when I'm in a bad mood, I want to put that on and just yell. Like, if I'm mad at someone, I'm going to just... Like Mimi's part where she's yelling at Roger.
Oh, it's so good.
Or when Mark and Roger are yelling at each other.
Yeah.
You don't
get the first one. Oh, Daphne.
But I think also for me, I think the I Cover You reprise, because now it has a new memory, is definitely my favorite. And I can't listen to that song.
Also, just a quick note on that, I just love that Jesse Martin, I mean, it's a terrible note, but also beautiful, that he didn't understand how to sing that song until Jonathan Larson died and he had to sing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it made him realize what that song meant.
Yeah, I think he was like sobbing, I think.
Yeah.
And I can contest to that, because like you don't, when you're in that role, until you're in that moment, it is very difficult to figure out what to do with that song.
Yeah. Especially
until you're seeing everything happen and you're standing in that moment, it is a very difficult song.
Yeah, because I mean, I also love the fact that it's also very vulnerable, because you're just kind of standing there. Yeah. There's nothing there to help you.
It's like you and this person under a sheet.
Yeah.
Basically.
That's it.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and play. We have a video for the Tony Awards from 1996.
I also love that for Jesse L. Martin, that beanie is like his thing.
His thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love also just the fact that they have so many people on the stage singing this, because they have all the minor characters as well. Because they don't get as much, you know.
But I also love that Rent has so many mini songs in between that everybody can sing.
Yeah,
at one point.
It's definitely not an ensemble.
Oh, here we go. Here's the diva moment.
Every time. My heart just soars.
Every time.
Yep. Especially her, because she just goes all out.
She really does, though.
Yeah.
I remember trying to sing that note, and one failing, but also being able to hold it for that long is an extremely hard thing to do.
Do you guys ever find, like, when I was listening in the car, I would do the the choreography.
Oh, me too.
But I love how just scrawny Anthony Rapp is.
Everybody. They're babies.
They're all babies. And then seeing them now.
It's also just funny watching the movie and like them playing the same age.
I know it's now.
10 years later.
Yeah.
Well, I love it also because when they did do a 10-year concert where they weren't really in the costumes, but they were like reading off the whatever, and it was just really funny to watch them. Like, there's a part where Jesse L. Martin and I can't remember the guy who plays Angel.
Wilson.
They're doing their dance for I'll Cover You, and he goes, oh, excuse my language, but he goes, oh shit, I forgot how fast you were. And it was really adorable.
Because Wilson is a dancer.
And speaking of Anthony Rapp, I do have a quote from someone that was part of the casting team. They said, Anthony, I remember thinking it was such a convergence of character and actor, it didn't feel like acting, it felt like this is who Anthony is.
No, that's how he is Mark in
he's
my
just,
head.
Yeah, he's
yeah.
just Mark.
Yeah, he is.
So it's hard to see him in other plays. Like, he was in the other Idina Menzel play.
Okay, yeah.
And I was like, yep, I just see Mark. It's hard for me.
Oh my God. Of course, we don't have the mooning in the
Tony version. Version.
I'm like, I'm really they're like, we gotta keep it classy.
But in 2016, that would have happened on this. That would have happened.
Yeah, they're like, we don't care.
I just love how fast they sped it up for the Tony Awards.
They had to.
We gotta get through this.
But this song is already originally like a fast song.
I know.
So the fact that they just speed it up, it's. And they had to cut a few of the lines out too. And I'm also really sad that Idina Menzel and Taye Diggs are not together anymore, because how you guys did. They met on Rent.
That was
Rent,
like the saddest thing ever.
And I was like, my relationship goal team, they're gone. I mean, I have a new one.
Now you have a new one. Yes.
But yeah,
I just hate that outfit they have Taye Diggs in.
I mean, I love it because that's pretty much what they did for the
I know, but he's just so muscular that I wanted him to be in a fitted shirt.
Oh, me always. But I love it because some of the guys are in fitted shirts.
With
I love that like, Anthony Rapp's belly button's out more than he is sometimes.
I just love that his dancing is
oh, I'm so, glad
so awkward.
took
that's
a second.
So funny.
That's true. Yay!
I haven't seen that in a long time.
I love that Anthony Rapp plays one of the straight characters in the show.
I know, and I was like, well.
He's like asexual, you guys. He's not really straight.
No, I mean, like, let's be honest.
That's very true.
Yeah, we don't know what he was.
Yeah. He was
Well, I mean, he was with, he was with Maureen. Was with Maureen.
Yeah. But Maureen was with Joanne.
Everybody.
It was very fluid. Everybody's very fluid back then.
So this won Best Musical, Best Book of a Musical, Best Original Score, Best Performance by a Featured Actor in a Musical for Angel, Wilson, Jermaine Heredia. And it was nominated for Best Performance by a Leading Actor for Adam Pascal, by Leading Actress for Dominique Rubin-Vega, for Best Featured Actress for Idina Menzel, Best Direction, Best Choreography, Best Line Design.
What was it up against?
I don't even know.
96. Oh, it was up against Bring Into Noise, Bring Into Funk, Chronicle of a Death Foretold, and Swinging on a Star.
Oh, so yeah. Oh, I mean, not, it was poised to win then.
Yeah, but I mean...
Except for Bring In the Noise, Bring In the Funk.
I mean, I really like that. So,
I don't know. Well, maybe it just was... The others were good, but just it overshadowed them so much because it's so...
So different, maybe?
Different.
And, well, and the fact that John Larson... I think there's...
Well, there's always
politics
involved.
Voters,
yeah.
When the voters go to...
Well, that's another thing. I'm glad you brought that up really quick, Brianna, because I know we're short on time. But do you guys think that this would have been such a big show if the tragic death of Jonathan Larson hadn't happened?
I think it still would have been a big show. Would it have been as big? Maybe it would have taken longer to get there.
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be hard for people to start to love it right away.
I think the actors' emotions were heightened by the fact that
he died.
Yeah. Because they really wanted to do him a justice.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And which characters do you guys think are you most relatable to?
Oh God!
I feel like a mixture of so many of them. I definitely have a little bit of Mark in me. I definitely have a little bit of Maureen, just because I'm a ham.
Yes.
I think I have a little bit of Collins in me, and I would say.
So you're the whole cast.
Not the whole cast.
Not
the whole cast. But I think those four are my main. I think a mixture of them.
I think I would be the actual love child of Roger and Mimi. Because I'm very introverted, like Roger, but I'm also like, I can have my moments with Mimi as well. So yeah, I think I would actually be the love child from the two of them.
I'm pretty sure I'd be the Benny.
Yeah. He's definitely the Benny.
Definitely the Benny.
Oh, I'm definitely the angel. I'm definitely the lover of life, optimistic one.
Yeah.
I love everybody.
I'm the love child of Benny and Collins.
There you go. I'm okay with this.
It could happen.
Yeah. It's canon.
Hey, Simpsons made a rent too. We can make it happen.
Hey.
Yeah. He needs to get over Angel. Brings Benny over to the
We can make this work.
Really quick before we end, I do want to get into, we just have a couple things of Broadway news this week. They announced the Hollywood Bowl musical. They always do one in July, and it's going to be Mamma Mia.
Oh,
yeah,
snaps.
I got a phone call from the Hollywood Bowl the other day. They were like, do you want to do season tickets this year? I was like, no, because I do not want to see Mamma Mia. The last three musicals that the Hollywood Bowl has done,
What was it last year?
It was
something that I didn't go see.
It was Hair.
No, Hair was not last year.
Hair
was 3 years ago.
Okay.
I don't remember what happened.
I saw Hair.
Hair, and then
it was
I went to go see Rent at a Hollywood Bowl, and I was like,
there was Rent. I remember the Rent one, then the Hairspray, then it was Hair.
Yeah, I did like the
Hairspray. There was Producers one. Before that.
Oh my God.
Oh, that one was
I saw, when I went, I saw Producers, and I saw Chicago.
We were at the same show.
I saw Producers in Chicago. Yeah. That was the first 2 years I lived in LA, and I've been here for, it'll be 6 years in June.
I don't know.
I can't remember. I mean, clearly, it wasn't that great.
I'm going to look it up. I want them to do
Aida.
You look it up, and I'm going to read off the other thing really fast, but they also have Sondheim on Sondheim is going to be there as well. National tour of Les Mis is going to launch this fall.
Shut up. Sorry. Okay. I'm okay.
So if anyone,
a chorus line.
Oh, yes,
that's
a chorus line.
That's why
I remember. I remember because James Law Jr., one of our hosts here, was very excited to get to see it.
Bore me to tears of the chorus line.
I like the chorus line.
I like it too.
I have a little bit of like love for it because my mom was such a big fan of it and watched it. She always talked about the show. I never saw the show, unfortunately, but I remember seeing the movie, which she hated.
I was a big fan of the movie, so
I did too.
I mean, it's good.
Of course, it's
a great show for.
Oh my God!
Of course, it's a great show for like artists.
Yeah.
But
like
for a show.
It's not a singer show. You're not going to go listen to
for the Hollywood Bowl.
It's definitely
for
a dancer show.
The Hollywood Bowl is not a very big show.
No, I'd rather go see it.
You need to see it in a close range because the dancing part of it.
It's so
good. You're not going to get the same thing from far away.
No.
Anyway. And then last, you guys were just in New York, and you saw two shows. Do you want to quickly tell people what shows they were in? A little bit of a review of it?
Well, we talked about, you just said that the National Tour of Les Mis is going on tour. Les Mis is in the Imperial Theater, which, and I touched on us going to see Great Comet Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, which was with Josh Groban, which actually one of the original cast members of Hamilton is going to be taking over Josh Groban in a few weeks.
No way.
Which is going to be a lot of fun to see. I mean, we won't see it, but like, it'll be fun.
And it's an amazing show. It's one of those more innovative shows. It's definitely a show that you go in and you're not expecting it.
Yeah,
and
he had then no idea.
Yeah, and you walk out and you go, this is theater changing.
Right.
Because it's that good.
It'll be a great Tony performance. You get little pierogies at the beginning of the show.
Depending on where you are.
I am all for shows that give me food.
They're in little Chinese food boxes. They kind of throw them out to people. It took what we know of Spring Awakening, kind of sitting on the audience, sitting on the stage.
See, that was for me. I saw Spring Awakening, and I was like, I don't know what this is. I'm going to watch it. And then I was like, I'm in love with this musical.
The cast is throughout the whole theater. So not only on the orchestra, but in the mezzanine. So they sing from different parts of the show, parts of the theater. And then Josh Groban never really leaves the stage because he's kind of in the pit with the band, which is also on the stage.
What?
They kind of move people. Like, if they were in this room, they would come in here and sit between us and sit and then us and sit with us. It was just a really, really
cool show. It's a very interactive show.
It will win Best Lighting, though.
Okay.
I'm hands down convinced it will win Best Lighting.
And then you guys saw A Bronx Tale.
Bronx Tale, yep.
How is that?
Our friend Ariana DeBose is in there. She plays Jane.
Sweet.
If you've seen the movie, which I have, which I love, it's definitely a good homage to the movie, but it's not as dark as the movie.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a solid Broadway show.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, it's just a really good show. Robert De Niro directed it, which it was great. So...
Yeah.
It was good. Right. Go see it.
But
great.
I actually did, because I know Newsies was out in theaters, I actually was able to get the last ticket for
Saturday.
So I got to see. It was my first time ever seeing, I've seen the movie and I've heard the songs.
Yeah, I saw the show when it came through in September.
Yeah, and I missed it.
In New York, before we left.
Yeah, so I finally got to watch it. Also brought my fiance, who's like not really into musicals. He was bawling.
Okay. Had he seen the movie?
Yeah, but he hasn't seen the movie since he was a kid. Yeah, but he also, and he was very young when he saw the movie, so he's like, I don't remember anything. I know Christian Bale was in it, and I was like, nah, we'll just move on from that cult classic
movie Newsies.
Yeah, we're just like, we'll just move on from that. But like, it was just really cool because there were so many kids in the theater who were watching, who were super excited, and they were singing along,
and fun.
it was a packed movie theater at the ArcLight, so it was really cool. Everyone was clapping while the audience was clapping. It was great.
Which, if folks don't know, they actually filmed that
at the
Pantages.
Mm-hmm. Which I didn't know that until I looked it up, and I was like, this is awesome. And
I had friends
I
that got tickets
it.
To that taping, and I was like,
shut up. Oh, that's not cool.
You a little bit.
And really quick, I know that... you know how the TV's doing all those musicals now? Mm-hmm. They did Hairspray and all those. I'm waiting for them to do Rent.
They're doing Dirty Dancing.
Is it
going to
be great? I'm waiting for them to do Rent.
Rent would be great.
You'd have to... It's going to be a hard one to put on a cable television for a family audience again.
Right. Oh, yeah.
See, that's why ABC, Disney needs to do Aida.
Do an HBO special.
There you go.
You bring us back Heather Headley. I'm down for that.
But yeah, we are all out of time, unfortunately, guys. So we will have to end this. Next week, we're going to be discussing the movie. Please make sure to go follow us at Broadway Beatdown on Twitter. You can also follow me at BFIPS14 on Instagram, Twitter, BFIPS1214 on Snapchat. And later this week, I'm in Speechless on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. And where can they find you guys?
I'm Drexel Hurd. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Drexel Hurd. Tomorrow night, I will be on Breaking In. It'll be a one-on-one interview with me and James Lott. And then we start The Good Fight on CBS tomorrow night as well.
Awesome. Hey guys, I'm Timothy Michael. You can find me on all social media platforms at I Am Timothy Mike. On Monday night at 10 p.m. I will be on Quantico, and Friday morning at 10 a.m. I will be on the On Produce Table Read series with Jeff Graham.
Nice. And you can find me dancing to Ice Tea Being Stirred at atorres890 all over social media platforms.
All right, guys, have a great week.
Don't date but today, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.